Here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by HoosierBat.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times, and our producer Dave Olson. We're on live every Wednesday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time, and you can hear rebroadcasts of any of our shows 24/7 anytime at TalkZone.com. We have a guest today later in the show, Andy Bothwell, Astronautilist, one of Phil's guys, freestyle rap singer, I guess, huh, Phil?
Let's just call him genre bending indie hip hop artist.
That you took the words right out of my mouth. That's just what I was thinking. But he's got a good following, I know that, and Phil's really into him, so it should be interesting.
Yeah, he's got a new CD out called This Is Our Science. Has some guest spots on it from Tegan Quinn of Tegan and Sarah. Some guys from a band called Midlake that I love, and it's a big deal for him. It's opened on the Billboard charts, which he's a new artist, not really used to being there, and he's touring, going to be in Chicago at Shuba's on Saturday night, which is a big venue for him. So yeah, I'm like a schoolgirl, excited about talking to him.
You're not going to be screaming by his limo, are you, Phil? Like, yeah!
I'm a pro, Tom.
Okay, well, we have some other things to take care of today. We're going to do the drawing at the end of the show. Panini gave us a Timeless Treasures football tin to give away, and I have three questions that people sent me to read off. We'll do that later in the show. I think Andy's probably going to come on around the halfway mark. And Dave, you were at the Cubs game last night for a while. You're still hanging in there with your boys, huh?
I was. I'd be in San Diego, but
I thought you said you were at. You were
no,
watching
no, no.
the Cubs.
I missed the end of it, but I know they won.
That's right. The Sox are home. That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't pay that much attention to the.
I watched the Cubs to the very end.
Yeah. Well,
we got the senior manager in Chicago. We have the senior.
Well, Ozzie is gone, and I think with the way everything came down from it, I think it's pretty clear it was definitely time for Ozzie to go. The way that whole thing came down was didn't make him look very good, don't you think, Phil?
Yeah, but before I get on that, yesterday I did the Chicago Tribune live show, and Dave Kaplan had a long interview with Ken Williams about all the just going through the whole thing. And at the end of it, Todd Hollinsworth, the CTL's Cubs analyst, was on the show. At the end of it, I'm like, yeah, and that's our good team in town. That's great. Let's go charge out. The money grabbing stuff couldn't have looked worse. Do the timing of it. I think we all knew it was coming to a head. I've been saying for a long time he's going to manage in Florida next year, so there was no surprise about it. But to have it happen during the season, I guess he's going to be introduced as the new manager in Florida tonight at their last game at the horrible football stadium they play in. Big deal, and try to use him to get jump started on their season tickets for the new ballpark. But yeah, it was really disrespectful in a lot of ways to a lot of people, I thought. And, I don't know, ultimately, he's going to be remembered as the manager who won a World Series in Chicago, and I think most people will sort of, as time fades, kind of forget how it ended. Somebody on the show last night made a comparison between Ozzie and Mike Ditka in terms of like their Chicago legacy. Will he be remembered as a baseball version of Mike Ditka? And then, you know,
I've always thought that.
Yeah, and can we expect him to have a Mike Ditka-like post-Chicago career? You know, is he walking into a buzzsaw in Florida?
Well, he didn't leave in as good a manner as Ditka left the Bears, I don't think. That takes something away from him. But there's definitely parallels with him and Ditka where they win the championship, and then they both got off track thinking more about the celebrity of what they were doing than concentrating on winning games. Ditka was getting all those commercials and almost battling his players for endorsements, it seemed like, and Ozzy doing his all the internet stuff and just seemed more interested in celebrity, it seemed to me. I think he just lost focus on what he should be doing to win games. And really, throughout his whole managing career, fundamentally, they just weren't sound. That was always pretty much my biggest complaint with Ozzie as a manager. The team could never bunt, get guys over, do any, they weren't good at the little things, and he didn't seem to take much of time in spring training or any time in order to make sure they could do those things.
Yeah, I wonder if, and Ryan Sandberg would be a good counterpoint to this if he does get to the big leagues as a manager. I wonder if some of this is what happens when you have a guy who was a good player himself, a good big league player managing, that, you know, you kind of take it for granted that guys will make the plays and, you know where to go with the cutoffs, and you don't really bear down and focus. And I kind of counterbalance that with Ron Gardenhire of the Mets, who was always sort of a backup bench guy, guy happy to be on the roster, but never a star. He played with the Mets, and then now managing the Twins.
Yeah.
When the Twins are going bad, they are on the field working hard. I was out there early this year when they were off to their bad start, and they had a dozen players out on the field at 2 o'clock in the afternoon before a 7 o'clock game hitting. And, you know, they weren't screwing around in the cage. They were getting after it. And, you know, I don't think Ozzy pushed his guys, ever really pushed his team in that regard. But that's probably more common than uncommon in the majors. I think the Twins approach is probably the uncommon one.
How long do you think it'll be before Ozzy blows up with Loria? I mean, I'd say by Memorial Day. I mean, if Joe Girardi had issues.
Yeah.
I think that's a time bomb down there.
He goes from Jerry Reinsdorf, who I think anybody in baseball would say Reinsdorf is one of the five best owners to work for. You know, the loyalty he shows toward people that, you know, want to work with him and do well for him, to Loria might be number 29 right now. I know Frank McCourt is thought less of than Loria, but I go past McCourt. I don't know of another current owner right now, that would have more question marks about him. And I think in a way, that's why Ozzie is getting the big money in Florida and why they were so happy to be able to talk to him and to hire him, because there's not a lot of credible guys that would go down there. So, you know, the fact that Ozzy had a good relationship there in 2003, well, he wasn't the boss, and he was a different guy. You're right what you said, Tom, about him getting caught up in his own image and celebrity. And I mean, he definitely changed over the 8 years he managed the White Sox. And, you know, for me, it was a difficult process because I liked the guy a lot. And it just became so tiresome. I would be out at the ballpark and I would just stand sort of at the back of a pack of people listening to him with my eyes rolling back into my head much of the time, because He's at a point where it's hard for him to talk about anybody but himself. You know, I thought you could ask about, how's AJ Pierzynski's hamstring pull, and somehow it turns into, yeah, people said shouldn't have played AJ, and somehow he would take any question and wind up making it about him, and that wasn't the guy that got there as manager in 2004, so it wasn't the guy that was the third base coach in Florida in 03. It'll be interesting to see if Loria, David Sampson, they're difficult to work with, team president, wind up thinking they're getting the same guy that they've always known.
Now, before we get to who you think might be a replacement, I know you guys know I've been a big critic of Adam Dunn, obviously, as just about everybody has. My big criticism was Ozzie kept playing him against lefties too long into the season when he was doing absolutely nothing. He got to the point he had 3 singles and 80 at-bats, which is, just mind-boggling how bad it was. But I thought to myself, who could I compare Adam Dunn to a lefty power hitter in history and see if there's any hope that maybe he can come back and do something, at least help the team, because they've got him for 3 more years. And a guy that I compared him to, and Reggie Jackson was obviously a better player, faster, but power numbers, they're not that far off, really. And Reggie Jackson, at one point in his career, and he was, I think, 37 years old at this time, during the second half of 1983, he hit 069 in 33 plate appearances in September. He hit 173 with 2 homers and 16 RBIs and 214 plate appearances in the second half. Came back in at the age of 38 the next year, still low average, 223, but he had 25 homers, 81 RBIs. In comparison to Dunn's year this year, if Dunn came back with that next year, we'd be dancing in the streets. And then at the age of 39, Reggie hit 252, 27 homers, and 85 RBIs with an OPS plus to 136. So a lefty power hitter who strikes out a lot, they can go into slumps, go into horrendous slumps, but there is a possibility that he could come back and help him here in the future. And I think it might even be good for him to have a different manager, just a different group there, where you don't have the same guys putting their face in their hands every time you strike out. I don't know, what do you think? What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think change can probably only be good for him. I think he really struggled with the DH situation, and I don't know, how they're going to change that. And, I don't know how, maybe he'll be able to adjust to it, but the truest words he said all year, this might have been May, I was talking to him, and he's basically said, if I start thinking, I'm dead. I'm done. If I start thinking. And, with that DH job, you have a bad at bat, you have nothing to keep you from thinking about it. And, he compares himself to Paul Konerko, who's very intellectual hitter, breaks down things, and Adam Dunn's success has been just, by instinct, and, see ball, hit ball, and, I don't know if a guy like that, it seems like it's sort of the perfect storm, and maybe, I think it would help him to play him in the field, but Lord, he was bad at first base. Yeah. I think maybe you could give him a start a week in a corner outfield spot. He seemed better in the outfield than he did at first base. What do you think about that?
He's horrible in the outfield. I mean, I don't think maybe once in a while it helps. I think maybe once every 10 days, Paulie's getting up there, rest him at first base. He's terrible at first base, but honestly, I think he's worse in the outfield. From watching him play the outfield some games in the National League, he was one of the worst outfielders I've ever seen. I think He's just going to, I don't know, put on cartoons for him in between bets or something. Do something to get his mind off of it. Wait, remember a few years ago, Paulie was having a horrible year and how down he got on himself. One of the biggest things of Paulie coming back, besides having, you know, he had some nagging injuries, but he doesn't get as down on himself when he has a bad at bat or makes an out. He seems to have, gets his focus right back and has a good at bat. They got to figure out a way to get done to forget his last at bat. And you say, see the ball, hit the ball. He's got to change something. It looks like he's not seeing the ball at all. I mean, with what he's doing right now, the way he's just swinging blindly and hope he makes contact, he just doesn't seem to be picking it up at all. Very, very weird, but there is hope. You know, a season off, you never know what happens in the off season. I think there is some hope, and there better be. The thing is, if he's this bad again, he made the quote, if I'm not having fun, I'm going to retire. I mean, how long do you go with performance like this before you say, I don't care what they're paying me, I got to retire. I can't take this anymore.
Yeah, I think he talked to his family and then realized, I think he took that quote back pretty quickly.
Yeah, right. You're leaving how much on the table?
Right.
Maybe before the end, though, if he doesn't get better, I don't think he could take it 4 years of this. You could see it. It is definitely bothering him. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he handled it really, really well, I think. I almost got in a loud argument one day at a golf course where the guy I was playing with was on his case. This guy's a White Sox fan, and then he said, and he's a jerk. And I'm like, he is not a jerk. You know, he stinks, but he's not a jerk. You know? And the guy's like, well, I have season tickets. I watch in the dugout, watch his body language. He's always pouting and off by himself. Well, you know, he feels like there's a funk around him. He's wanting to protect the other players from his funk, maybe.
And he's letting everybody down, I think that really got to him. He felt like he was letting everybody down, and he was. That's got to be tough. And I think Ozzie would be really tough to play for when you've got a slump going. It just seems to me. I don't know.
Here's something else that would help him, a better lineup around him where he doesn't mean that much. You know, I mean, I believe our guy Juan Pierre, fourth on the White Sox in RBIs with 50.
Hurt them a lot when Quinton went out. I mean, they were still in it when Quinton went down and they didn't have anybody come pick up his RBIs at all. Either you keep Quinton or you have to trade him for another bat that can produce Quinton type numbers, because his RBIs when he left, there was nobody backing up Paulie at all.
Yeah, it just up and down the lineup there, Gordon Beckham's got to get better.
How about Morrell, though, that last month? Remember I was saying a while ago, I could see Morrell turning it. Morrell is a big guy. He's coordinated, and he's pretty fast. I could see him developing into a 20-homer, 75-RBI guy with a real good glove at third. I think when you look at a lot of times Beckham and Morrell were coming up back-to-back, and Morrell's a lot bigger guy than Morrell. Or then Beckham. I could see Beckham needs to be a spray hitter to all fields and gaps and stuff. I could see Morrell hitting some homers before he's done. I really like him.
Yeah, I don't know about the 25 homers, but I would have thought
20 homers. I think he's got that power.
He's got that good gap power. I thought he would maybe have a 70 RBI this year if they played him every day. And you know, that would be no surprise based on how he played in the minors if that's what he did. It was weird to me the fact that, you know, he had like almost Deon Vicieto, you know, numbers for at-bats without walks. He got really messed up in the first half of the year and was swinging at bad pitches and taking strikes. And, you know, I don't, you know, he's not going to have every month like this next year, but what he's done at the end really isn't a fluke. It's you know, getting back to the kind of hitter he's been in the minor leagues with the White Sox. He's a good player, I think.
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to be real good. I think their lineup has the potential to be decent. I really, you know, though, with Burley last night, and that might be his last game, to me, Burley is one of those guys that as long as he wants to play for you, you do whatever you have to do. You move things around. You do whatever you have to do, but you keep Burley. And it sounds like it's not like they're ruling him out. They have to see how things go and how the money goes, but I sure hope their plan is to do everything they can to keep Burley.
Oh, they absolutely have to. You know, I don't think their pitching is nearly as deep past him as they think. And, you know, I'm glad he had the good start last night and didn't go out on he had that run of three really bad starts in a row. And people, you know, makes it easy to write him off. Every time he has a bad little stretch, it's like he's too old, he's lost his velocity, he can't pitch in the American League anymore. Well, he wound up with an ERA in the threes.
Yeah, that's all so wrong.
Over 200 innings again. You know, I don't know if you'd want to run him out in the American League East, Yankees, Red Sox, Rays all the time. But you know, I think he's, you know, he's the core, he and Canerco are the core guys, and you know, they got to keep those, you know, keep those guys and get some better guys around them. And you know, Danks' ERA is like 4.3 this year.
Floyd, one of those two guys, I think they're going to have to move one of those two guys. I think they might have to do that. Don't you see either or Danks or Floyd?
Yeah, I think Danks is at the point where you either sign him long term or trade him. And, you know, he's only 1 year away from free agency now. But you know, I don't know that they have the guy Zach Stewart had the one great game against Minnesota, and that's, you know, and then the rest has been really shaky. And you know, Dylan Axelrod, I don't know, maybe he could be your an American League starter. I think that's pushing it.
Well, can't they trade him for another pitcher who's just more cost certain? You know, that's a similar quality pitcher. I don't know who it would be. I haven't looked into it, but that's what I would try to do. Somebody that you know what they're making and going to be making the next couple of years, that, you know, it can put up the innings and have similar type numbers to a typical Danks or Floyd year, which is basically their typical year is they win 10 or 12 games and they're right around 500 with about a 4.0 ERA. It seems like there's a lot of guys out there like that.
Hey, Dave, we had this argument on Chicago Tribune Live last night. Should it matter to either of the Cubs or the White Sox that if they hired an icon from the other side, should Ryne Sandberg be in play for the White Sox manager's job? Or by virtue of being a Cub, do they have to just look past him?
I don't know. I think Sandberg would be great for the White Sox. You know, I think wherever Sandberg's going to end up, I think he's going to be a solid manager. You know, my thing on Florida is I think it's going to have the potential to be the new Miami Marlins. Have the potential to be like the Cubs South, because I think the odds are Zambrano will end up there. New ballpark, Little Havana. You might see Sammy hanging around the ballpark. Could be a Cub South down there.
Yeah, and you know, Ramos Ramirez is a guy that makes sense for them. Third base was a position they would look to upgrade, and there aren't a lot of guys on the market, so he's, I think, a guy they would target to sign. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, well, before we get to our break, I've got for the drawing, I had some questions sent in as far as the few people either wanted to tell me about their items or ask what I think the value is. And when you send me an item that I use in the show, each month we get an item to give away from Panini. This month, the drawing is for a Timeless Treasures football tin, which we'll be doing the drawing at the very end of the show. Anybody this month that we use gets in the drawing. The first question is from Chris D., who said, a few months ago I received a 2010 Upper Deck Grade of the Game Bill Russell Auto 5 of 5 from Upper Deck as compensation for a redemption card. Apparently, a lot of times, if they can't get an autograph from a guy in time to get into a product, they'll have a redemption, and then sometimes they're slow even getting the redemption back, and they offer a replacement for it. So it sounds like this is what they're doing with this guy, where they sent him a 5 of 5 Bill Russell autograph card. Bill Russell, a few years ago, his stuff was a lot higher than it is now, because for a long time, he wouldn't sign autographs for anybody. There were stories of him when he played, he wouldn't even sign items for his teammates, where they'd be trying to get like a team signed item, and he wouldn't do it. His thought was, I'd much rather shake somebody's hand and say hello than sign my name on an item. But then apparently the card companies have paid him enough where he signed some things for the for them. So we've got that card is probably, I saw another one numbered to 5 sold for a little over $100. So that one's probably in the $100 to $150 range. The second item is a PSA 8 1977 Topps Mexican version of the Walter Payton card. This PSA 8, this is from Steve V. I saw one sell for $700 as compared to the American version of this card sells for about $50. There's just very few of them around, and they weren't really available in the U.S., so it's quite a bit more valuable, that version of the 1977 Walter Payton card. And the last one that was sent from Rob H., he got a Babe Ruth single-sign baseball. It's a low grade, but there's great provenance to this ball of where the signature came from. He bought it from the guy who had it from the time he was a little kid when he got the ball signed on the Babe Ruth radio show, actually. So these guys met, and the guy told him the story of getting the baseball. And I think there's more value to an item like that where you have proof of the background, where you can actually say where it originally came from. So this ball in a lower grade is still probably worth in the $4,000 to $5,000 range just because of the provenance and all that goes along with it. So now it's time for a short break. And when we come back, Andy Bothwell, Astronautilist, will be on with us. So hang in there, everybody. We'll be right back.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com. The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouth-watering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
And now the moment you've all been waiting for.
Fire it up. Ready?
You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in Internet talk radio.
Special guest today, and since he's a groupie, I'll let Phil Rogers do the introduction. Take it away, Phil.
Okay, special guest we've got today, genre-bending indie hip-hop artist, Astro Nautilus, grew up as Andy Bothwell. Andy, thanks for doing the show. For starters, do you prefer we just go with Andy, or should we go with the full Astro?
Oh, for God's sakes, please call me Andy.
At a guy, my son Dylan Rogers, who's a college freshman, introduced me to Astro. One of the great things about having kids is they keep you somewhat current on music. I think when he introduced him, he said sort of a rapper. And that's a genre of music that I don't think I would normally be drawn to, a little bit more rock folk, like Dave Hoekstra, one of our hosts from the Chicago Sun-Times. But you listen to it, and it's really unlike any other kind of music that I've seen. And I was caught you at a show in Phoenix last year at the Rhythm Room, and you blew me away. How do you describe what it is you do?
I often try to just, I think right now the genre that I'm going for is historical fiction hip hop. I think that's the closest that I've gotten so far.
Well, that's, that's pretty darn accurate. I would think your song Trouble Hunters was the one that really caught me at first. That's, about the Battle of Trenton and the Revolutionary War. Now, my son Dylan and I play fantasy baseball together. Our team is known as the Trouble Hunters.
No kidding, really? That's fantastic.
I think that is one of the things that I really like about your music is that topics you can't imagine somebody would do a song on, on the new album, Dmitry Mendeleev, who apparently my son knew, but it was news to me that the guy behind the Table of Elements who created that, and there's Thomas Jefferson on the new album. Did just a big history guy, or and another thing too, you have a scary IQ. Watching you in Phoenix. I wouldn't want to play, any sort of game with you. I think you would pick my pocket.
I'm a really good Trivial Pursuit teammate. I've acquired a pretty good working knowledge of a lot of fantastic trivia, and I've applied that, I think, pretty well to my career.
We probably should have got to this. You're coming to us today, Cincinnati. You played last night and on a tour that's going to take you to Chicago Saturday, playing at Shuba's. The album just launched, and first time ever on the Billboard charts. Is that right?
That is a fact. Without any real advertising campaign or marketing or any promotion, just having a really devoted fan base and a really good word of mouth, we managed to make it into the top 10 on the iTunes hip hop charts and the Billboard charts as well. It's been pretty exciting last 2 weeks for me.
That's awesome.
Andy, this day sometimes. Just curious, where were you at in Cincinnati?
I'm actually out of Cincinnati right now. We're in Covington, Kentucky.
Well, where'd you play?
Oh, we played across the river in a place called the South Gate House.
Yeah, I've been there.
It's
a great place.
Old mansion that was General John T. Thompson's birthplace, the inventor of the Thompson machine gun. And they've converted it into, over the last 30 or 40 years, converted it into a music venue as well. It's apparently haunted. It's a pretty fantastic old mansion on top of a hill with a great little couple of clubs and rooms in it.
Right, I've actually written about that place. It is a great place. Where are you from? I'm just curious with your accent stuff. Give me a little bit of background where you're
from. I was born in Virginia and was raised in rural Maryland until I was 12. But Florida is really what I consider my home. I moved down to Florida after that, and that's really where my home and my heart is. My folks are still down there, too.
Andy, I worked for the Florida Times Union in the early 1980s. I know you're a Jacksonville Beach guy, and your song "Ocean Walk" intro apparently about walking your dog on Jacksonville Beach, I think, kind of counting the steps down there. How close to the beach did you grow up?
That house, when I wrote that house was probably probably about a quarter mile from the beach. It was a pretty big change growing up in like the countryside of Howard County, Maryland.
We've got a few more clips of your music coming up. I don't know if we'll get to Ocean Walk, but when the your little talking preamble to the song on that, when the first few times I heard it, I thought my son was listening to Willie Nelson. Anybody ever hear Willie Nelson in your voice or in that song?
There's definitely a lot of influence of Willie Nelson and a lot of outlaw country musicians as well, too. I'm a real big Kris Kristofferson fan and Jerry Jeff Walker as well. So that's I recently, in the last 5 years or so, really embraced the fact that I have this really deep voice. I kind of tried to fight it for a long time, and I think I've finally come to grips with the fact that I have this real deep voice. And so, yeah. A lot of Willie Nelson sometimes can come out in it.
I follow your Twitter stream, so I know you're probably not normally up at 8 in the morning. We really appreciate doing the show. It seems like when you play, you kind of go hard after the shows too, don't you?
It depends. I'm getting up in years, and so I go a little bit slower than I used to. Last night, some of the band wanted to stay at the bar, so I was happy to hang out and have a whiskey with them, but I was pretty low and lazy and ended up helping carry my drummer back to the hotel room.
now because this is a sports show, I feel obligated we ought to throw this on there. I know you follow baseball, and I don't know about permanent addresses, but I know you've sort of taking up some ties in the Dallas area, Denton. Where my son goes to school now, University of North Texas, Goldman Green, and then Seattle and on to Minnesota. So I got to ask you, do you just love the designated hitter? Why always the American League?
Yeah, I grew up rooting for the Baltimore Orioles, so I'm devoted to the DH till I die. I can only live in American League towns.
So when you come to Chicago, it's the south side.
Yeah, I got to be on the south side, though, right?
I think so.
Andy, this is Tom Morgan. Now, as far as the south side goes, I'm sure you heard that Ozzie Guillen is no longer manager of the White Sox.
How could I not? He's one of my favorite Twitter feeds.
Well, Phil tells me that you have a thing where you have a freestyle rap with suggestions from the audience.
Yeah, sometimes.
Have you ever done an Ozzie rap?
I have never done an Ozzie rap.
Okay, that's something to work on.
we got to have goals, right?
Yeah.
I always thought, I know you were following the Texas Rangers last year in the playoffs, and, you know, I'm a Twitter guy. I don't know if I can get a direct message to you. I don't think you follow me, so I wasn't able to get the suggestion to you, but I always thought you should do, like, come up with something that would be a Josh Hamilton, Nolan Ryan combination.
I remember finding out about this a little too late into the playoff series, but just that trio of characters of Josh Hamilton, Nolan Ryan, and Ron Washington. I would watch a buddy cop movie starring all three of them.
Yeah, and
this is Dave, what does your stage name mean?
I wish it meant something. I wish it was something clever, but I've just been, started rapping when I was 12 years old, and I came up with this name when I was 15 because I thought it sounded really cool.
Yeah. Now, you're, you know, I know, again, because you're big in baseball, I just wonder who would be a likely rookie of the year this year? Would you go with Eric Hosmer from the Royals or Mike Wiebe of the Riverboat Gamblers?
Mike Wiebe, undeniable rookie sensation, 20 years running.
Yeah,
rookie of the year every year.
How can you be rookie of the year every year? I mean, what's going on there?
I'll tell you what, if you go watch the Riverboat Gamblers perform live, you will understand exactly why he is rookie of the year. He is they're a Denton, Texas punk rock band, and they're a kind of a little known band, but just a few years ago, Spin Magazine put out their best live performances in the world, the best live acts in the world, and they were in the top 10. They beat out the White Stripes and all sorts of bands. That watching them perform is one of the most exciting live shows you'll ever see.
Yep.
I can say that with some certainty, having been a part of over 1,000 shows myself.
Now I know he plays on your new album, and you also have Tegan Quinn. You have some of the mid-late guys playing on it. Did you go to Australia and play with Tegan and Sarah in Australia?
Yeah, I did a European tour with them, and it went so well, they decided to go ahead and take me to Australia as well, too, which was a riot. It was a blast.
How is it just a small community of musicians, or how have you expanded, you know, your circle to bring in so many other you know, musicians and interesting young acts, too?
It's much like any field. Like, you know, if you start really working in a field, you just, you know, slowly get to know the other people in your business and your counterparts. And, you know, you tour enough, particularly for people that, you know, tour pretty heavy, it sort of becomes like sort of a fraternal order. You know, the people that are really out there touring a lot, you see each other a lot, you cross paths a lot, and you get to respect each other, because it's, there's a big difference between musicians that just tour occasionally and musicians that tour, you know, really hard. And so we kind of have a mutual respect for each other. So a lot of the people that end up on my records are a lot of people that also are you know, pretty solid road dogs as well, too, and aren't afraid of spending 10 months on the year, 10 months of the year on the road.
Now, your tour this time around, is it same as the when I saw you at the Rhythm Room? All your music, sorry about my phone ringing here, all your music recorded and playing on an Apple computer, is that still the way you roll?
No, I've got a full band now. I have completely upgraded. I've got a drummer, a guitarist, and the guy that plays this fantastic little piece of equipment called the machine. It's like a drum machine and a sampler.
Did you read poetry?
Excellent.
Andy, you want to let people know where you're going to be in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm playing at Shuba's Tavern in Chicago this Saturday. We came pretty close to selling it out last time. I think we probably hit the nail on the head this time. It should be a lot of fun.
Shuba's is a great place.
I love that spot. It's one of my favorite venues in America, actually. They're a great group of folks.
You say that everywhere you go, don't you?
No, most assuredly, I do not.
Did you read poetry? I mean, are you a fan of poetry? And do you apply that same type of wordplay in your lyrics?
Certainly. Like, I grew up. I went to school in Dallas, and that's how I kind of got my Dallas connection. I went to SMU to go become a director for theater and a lighting designer for theater. And I was completely obsessed, particularly with classical theater, and so consequently a lot of prose and poetry was always kind of in my life. It wasn't until much later, though, that a lot of the poetry that I got excited about too wasn't like beat poetry or slam poetry, the kind of things that are the most readily connectable to rap music. I was more interested with sort of some of the more intricate poetry of the classical age. I really like stuff with a pretty intense meter and scansion and that sort of thing. So like Gerard Manley Hopkins and William Shakespeare, of course, a lot of those people were a big influence on my work.
So what was the process like to bring that into a contemporary, texture like this?
Well, you just, particularly some of the cadences and stuff like, part of working in rap music is really always, thinking of new ways to kind of, basically speak. You're thinking of new patterns and thinking of new rhythms and thinking of new cadences to make what is, potentially a sort of one note instrument into something, into something more exciting. Rap music is as much about content as it is about the rhythm and the pattern of the whole thing.
Right.
And so it's, as much as a drummer is always trying to figure out new lines and new ways to play, a four chord beat, you got to try to think of new ways to kind of, just speak over that 4/4 beat. So a lot of the kind of more intricate, rhythms and scansions and stuff come in from a lot of the classical poetry. And that was something that was pretty easily applicable for me.
So then how do you pick a subject? I mean, how do you pick your material?
I was never in a band, like in my garage, just kind of hammering out on a guitar. I was taught, I was taught how to make art, I guess, through theater school and through school. And so it's always been a pretty academic process for me, making art. And so a lot of it is a lot of reading and research. And I read, I'll read books while I'm working on a record and sort of generate a thesis or a hypothesis on how to approach the record. And I sort of then just start applying, things to the kind of big, cork board in my mind and making a big collage of images and stories that all sort of swirl around the thesis of the album. And I'm always really drawn to stories that are a little lesser known and stories of, whether they're personal stories in my own life or stories of, other people's lives. I'm always, particularly drawn to people that are, in positions where they're risking it all, in the name of something that they really believe in. So that always kind of seems to continually crop up.
Andy, I don't know if you can hear the desperation in Dave's voice, but he's a Cubs fan. I know one song on your new album, Lift the Curse. Is it okay if Cub fans think that you had them in mind?
if I had been a smarter man, I most assuredly would have dropped a goat reference in there somewhere. I feel your pain, sir. I feel your pain. Not to a great degree, but I am a Baltimore Orioles fan, so I do know a little bit about watching your team fall to pieces over and over again.
That's for sure.
Well, our guest today, Astronautilus Andy Bothwell. Thank you for coming on with us, Andy. And I know Phil doesn't want to say this, but you would actually absolutely make his day if you follow at @CHITRIBROGERS. Chai Trib Rogers on Twitter. You would make his day. I can tell, right, Phil?
Hey, absolutely. it's all about the Twitter.
Thanks a ton
for getting up early and doing it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's funny that my PR agent is a Chicago Cubs fan, and he's been reading you, Phil, for years and years. And he was so excited when he emailed me this, more excited than any other of the rock and roll magazine interviews that I've done. He was like, "You've got to be kidding me! Phil Rogers is a fan of yours." He was really very excited. So you can. There's a guy down in Atlanta, Georgia, who's probably listening to this right now, who is super excited that I'm doing this.
Well, it's all about the hardball, one way or the other.
Always, always and forever.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on with us, Andy. You were great today, and good luck on your show this week at Shuba's in Chicago this Saturday.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Okay. So long. Well, that was excellent, Phil. Great, great idea. Great guest.
Well, you know, really a smart guy. That's the only thing that, you know, I think in any form of society, you know, I mean, you, when you spot somebody really smart, and I think, you know, it's been a lot of fun seeing him have some success. That show I saw him in Phoenix last year, he announced that he had just decided he was going to go for it and become a full-time musician. I'm not sure what he was doing to make some money before, if he was doing any of that theater lighting he had studied or what he was doing, but, you know, he really went for it, and, you know, he seems to be getting his career off to a running start. So, I hope people will check out the new CD, This Is Our Science. And, you know, if you looking for something to do Saturday night, you know, if you don't like it, just, give us a call later. We won't refund your money, but we'll tell you we're sorry that you missed the point.
Well, I think he picked up two more fans. Not only me, but Dave Olson was saying he was just going to download his new album. So I think he's got at least two new fans here.
You know, his lyrics are his lyrics are kind of dense, I would call them. I mean, you got to hear them a few times to know where he's going with it. And it's, you know, he does, you know, it is a fast voice saying them. So, you know, you got to pay some attention. But there's a lot there, I think. A lot of meat on that bone.
With that history background, he
well, before, so I'm sure I remember. What was that, Dave?
I said, with the history background, he would have liked that place he played last night. That is quite an awesome place. It's like a big old mansion right on the river down there in Kentucky. So I'm sure he enjoyed
it. I swear,
that.
I think I've been there once.
Yeah.
I think I've been there before. You've been there, huh, Dave?
Yeah,
that sounds like a neat place. Yeah. Well, so I'm sure we get this in today. I want to do the drawing for the Timeless Treasures football box from Panini. I'll email the winner, and if they're in the area, they can come into T-Crown and pick it up, or if you're outside the area, I'll ship it to you. The winner is Chris D. Okay, that was via email, so I'll email them back, and you have a Timeless Treasures football tin waiting for you, Chris, so we'll make that connection after the show. All right, now, before we get to the end here, we've got a few more minutes. Let's get back to Phil. Who would be, if you're in charge of the White Sox, if you have Kenny Williams' job, who would you want, knowing what your talent is, who would you want to manage the White Sox right now?
I think I would want somebody who has managed before. I think they have a big challenge. I'm a Bobby Valentine guy. There aren't a lot of Bobby Valentine guys out there. His personality turns off people.
That is
strong. Another strong personality and another high ego guy. But I think of the guys not working, he's the guy that I think could go someplace and take a mid-level team and win with it.
I was thinking the exact same thing. I have Bobby Valentine written down. As far as also the entertainment aspect that Ozzy gave, Bobby Valentine would definitely be the closest to that, except I think he'd be a little stronger on fundamentals than Ozzy. But as far as entertaining, Bobby Valentine's there with that.
Yeah, you know what? He's another smart guy. When I was talking about what I like about Andy, it's intelligence. And Bobby is another high IQ guy that burns, the light burns bright. Sometimes he turns people off. I enjoy watching his telecast with ESPN now, Sunday Night Baseball, him and Oral Hershiser, my favorite broadcast team. I really like the way they break down the game, but I think he's a real wasted asset not being a manager right now.
I can't believe Jim Fregosi's name in the mix. Is that really true? That's kind of the Jack McKeon type thing.
Yeah, Fregosi has a cult of people that think you know, think he could really be a guy that could win. I'm not a big Fregosi guy myself. I don't know him as well as some other people do. He has a lot of loyal supporters out there in the baseball community, though.
Now, as far as the playoffs, are the Tampa Bay and Boston are tied right now? Is that right?
Right.
And, I think so.
And the other leagues are dead tied. The Cardinals and the Braves are tied. Yeah. Yeah, both wild cards have to be determined from dead ties with one game to play.
If Tampa Bay had a better stadium, I would definitely be rooting for them to beat out the Red Sox, but I hate watching games in that pit of a dive that Tampa Bay plays in. I just can't even stand watching the games. I really like their manager, though. I think they have one of the – I like Gardenhire and Madden, I think, are two of the better managers in baseball.
Yeah. It's just nice to see a Goliath Goliath ball.
So well, if, what about
if
Dave?
You could get rid of
– Yeah. Okay, well – Phil's cutting in and out here. So, Dave, who would you want for – have you come up with somebody you're hoping the Cubs sign up for manager?
Still, I'm still on the Sandberg thing. I bought into all that. And I think I especially think that we were talking about the end of the season out at the ballpark. You know, I think they're not going to be good for the next couple of years. Same thing with Florida's going to do with Ozzy. I think they could build, they're going to build some type of campaign, season ticket campaign around Samber, put him on the schedules and stuff. But all that aside, I think he's going to be a solid and a successful manager for somebody. That's my favorite pick. I think it could happen.
I think he makes a ton of sense for the Cubs.
Yeah.
It really could now. And after watching Quadi this year, I suppose it might be lucky for Rhino he wasn't named last year, but he would make a heck of a lot of sense. They need a good PR move like that. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Once again, it's usually the most interesting season for Chicago baseball fans.
This has been one of the worst ones in recent years.
Well, that's the end of another show. I want to thank Andy Bothwell, Astro Nautilus, for being a guest with us today. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra, the Sun-Times, and producer Dave Olson. We're on every Wednesday live from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time, and you can hear the rebroadcast 24/7 anytime at TalkZone.com. Have a great week, everybody, and listen to a song here to end the show from Astro Nautilus.
I know it's hopeless, hell ain't big enough to hold us back. Come on, let's pick a fight. We hunt for trouble tonight. I know it's hopeless, hell ain't big enough to hold us back. Come on, boys, we're right. We hunt for trouble tonight. Tonight. We are for trouble with our fingers dipped in blood. We load our rifles with a hangman's heart. If we're united for the last sunlight, the snake, the cut and the fight to come back alive. Our brother Benjamin is off in France. We're taking Trenton back again. The garrison, the Hessians will fall. They say Delaware will freeze a man. We're chasing sovereigns.